What I want to do is I want to do these lectures in a traditional chalkboard style, or as opposed to PowerPoint. The reason is that PowerPoint, at least I tend to go too fast with PowerPoint. Then the ideas come at you way, way too fast. Okay, also PowerPoint isn't very flexible if we want to go off on a tangent and so on and so forth. So the idea is it's going to be a traditional lecture, so please take good notes. If English is not your native language, and you're having trouble making notes, then make friends with someone who takes good notes. Okay? So that this is part of the idea of working together. Okay? So don't be a loner, don't be shy, you know, get together in groups, work together, you know, and you'll be doing a lot of working together in the afternoon. So basically in the morning, I throw a bunch of ideas at you, concepts, pictures, diagrams. You got a whole bunch of ideas floating around in your head. In the afternoon, we work on exercises to try to clarify those ideas and have them make sense. And that's only going to work if you work in groups together and share ideas. Someone knows this, doesn't know that, or vice versa, and you share ideas and everyone gets an understanding of what it is we're talking about here. So remember, relativity and quantum, these are the foundations of all of the physics that happens today. And so we need to understand these ideas. So these lectures are designed to give you a really, really basic understanding of what are the ideas that changed the world. Okay, so let's go with relativity. Okay, so first off, how many of you know a little bit about special relativity? How many of you know a lot about special relativity? Okay, so so roughly speaking, we have this idea that somehow the speed of light is a universal constant. Okay, and from that, there are consequences which flow. Okay, an example of one, give me an example of some consequences that flow from that. That's right, nothing can travel faster, yep. What are some other weird things about special relativity? Length, contraction, time dilation. Okay, so length contraction means something like this. This thing is now 1 meter long when it's at rest with respect to you. If I make this thing move across the room and you measure the length of this thing while it's moving, you will find that it's shorter. If it's going close to the speed of light, it's maybe only half a meter long. That's weird. Okay, that's strange. Okay, also, time dilation is equally strange. It's saying something like this. If you and I have identical watches and tick, 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 when 1 second elapses for you, 1 second elapses for me. Okay? Whereas if I'm walking like this, then you will look at my watch and you will say, when 1 second elapses for you, less time elapses for me. Moving clocks run slow. Okay, that's also counterintuitive. Okay, what I want to emphasize is these counterintuitive facts about the universe, or apparently counterintuitive facts about the universe, follow from the idea that the speed of light is a universal constant. Okay, so the weirdness of special relativity gets pushed back to the weirdness of the idea that the speed of light is a universal constant. Okay, what that's saying, to say that the speed of light is a universal constant, that's like saying, if I have a flashlight here at rest pointing in this direction, if I'm standing here, light is coming at me like this, how do I measure the speed of light? Well, I take out a ruler like this, which is 1 meter long, I time on my watch how long it takes the light to go from there to there, and I figure out the speed of light, right? And the weird thing about saying that the speed of light is a universal constant is that the speed of light that I measure is the same whether I'm standing here at rest with respect to the flashlight, or running toward the flashlight, or running away from the flashlight. Okay, that's really weird. Speed of light is coming at me at 3 times 10 to the 8 meters per second. If I run toward it, it's also coming at me at 3 times 10 to the 8 meters per second. That's weird. Okay, so the weirdness is really in here, okay, the idea that the speed of light is a universal constant. Okay, now, in order to really understand special relativity, we need to get rid of the weirdness. We need to get around that. We need to see that it's actually natural. And the fact is, Einstein did not say that the speed of light is a universal constant. He said something close to that, subtly different, but it's different in a very important way. And so the focus of these lectures, the first couple lectures at least, is to understand that what Einstein said, is to understand properly what Einstein said about the speed of light. and you will see that it's actually a very believable thing, so that these things become believable and natural. So the goal is, at the end of these special relativity lectures, for you to have a sense that length contraction and time dilation are perfectly natural. In fact, if these properties were not true of the universe, you would say the universe is very strange. Okay, so that's the goal, right? So let's see if we can get there. Okay, so we'll start with an idea, the idea of space-time diagrams. Okay, so so Newton had some ideas about space and time. Okay, so Newton had this idea of absolute space and universal time. Okay, so what do these things mean? Well, let's see. So absolute space means something like this. You have in your mind this picture of this emptiness, and objects float around in this emptiness. So if I throw a baseball across the room here, then I have in mind something like this. Here are some axes labeling my reference frame, my space. And I've thrown, say, a baseball like this, and it goes on some parabolic trajectory like that. Okay, so I have an object moving through this absolute space here. Okay, universal time, what does that mean? That means that if I have someone standing here, say, so we have two objects in this picture. One person is just standing at rest in this universal space. And this object, we have a second object, which is moving in that space there. Okay, to say that there's universal time means that there's some kind of great grandfather clock in the sky, okay, so ticking away time like this. And the point is that when 1 second elapses for this person, I should say it this way, when 1 second elapses for, you know, big universal time, 1 second elapses for this person, and 1 second elapses for that baseball. Okay, so when 1 second elapses for this guy, 1 second elapses for that guy, regardless of the fact that they are in different states of motion relative to each other. Okay, the fact is, that's wrong. Okay, time moves at different rates relative to people in relative motion. Okay, different relative rates. So, so what Einstein discovered is that space and time are affected by motion. Okay, the relative motion between the baseball and the person affects the relative rate at which time moves for these two objects. Okay, and what we get is, so in order to see that, the key step is to show explicitly the motion of objects, not only through space, but also through time. Okay, so here is an object which is moving through space. Okay, but it's also obviously moving through time. Right? If I strap a wristwatch to that baseball and throw it, okay, time is ticking for that baseball as it's moving through space. Okay, and even if something is at rest, there's an object at rest. Okay, it's not moving through space, but it's always moving through time. If I strap a wristwatch to that piece of chalk, time is ticking away for that piece of chalk. Same for that person there. Okay, so the idea, Einstein's idea, was to really focus on that fact that things not only move in space, but they're always inexorably moving through time. Okay, and that actually ends up taking these two concepts, space and time, and welding them together into something called space-time, as we'll see. Okay, a single entity. It's not space. Space is not separate, and time is not separate, but they are welded together into a single entity called space-time. Right. Okay. So now we're going to draw some space-time diagrams. Okay, so let's start way down here at the bottom here. I'll give you a couple of examples. So here I'm drawing a space axis. Okay, we're always going to have things moving just in one space dimension, and then we'll show time as well. So we have two-dimensional pictures all the time. Okay, so this is, say, Alice standing over here. and we'll say that Alice is at rest. Okay, and her space axis is this horizontal axis, x. And we'll put a subscript A indicating that this is Alice's space that we're talking about. So in Alice's space, stuff is going to be happening. Okay. So, and let's say, okay, how do we draw Alice in a space-time diagram? This is just a space diagram. We have Alice just sitting at one location. In a space-time diagram, we have to recognize that not only is, okay, not only is Alice not moving in space, but she is moving in time. Okay, so how do we indicate that? Well, we indicate that by drawing a vertical line like this. Okay, so what does that mean? So this indicates the ticking of Alice's clock. So it's saying that as basically time is vertical and space is horizontal. So it's saying that as time goes on, okay, Alice's position in space is not changing. Okay, so her this is called the world line. Her world line is vertical. So this point on her world line might indicate her clock reading 0 seconds. Okay, and then when her clock reads 1 second, that might indicate this point. You know, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, and so on. Okay, so this line, this vertical line that we've drawn here, indicates somebody at rest, their clock ticking, someone at rest whose clock is ticking. Okay? And so this is time according to Alice. We put a subscript A on there. Right? Okay, so that's really simple. Now let's add some more interesting objects here. So let's suppose that in Alice's space next to her, there's another object. Okay, we got Bob here. Okay, let's suppose that Bob is at rest. So we got Alice here, and we got Bob standing next to her, and they're both at rest. Okay, so what is Bob's world line in Alice's space-time here? Well, Bob is located to the right of Alice, and he's at rest with respect to Alice. So as time goes on, the spatial distance between the two doesn't change. Okay, so Bob's world line runs parallel to Alice's world line. Okay, so he is at rest with respect to Alice. The distance between them doesn't change. Okay, and now his clock is also ticking. Okay, so when Alice's clock reads, say, 0 seconds, his clock might read, say, I don't know, say, I don't know, four seconds. Let's say 7 seconds. Okay, so the clocks need not be synchronized. Okay, like your clock might read noon, and my clock might read 10. Okay, that's no big deal. They're just not synchronized. Okay, but what is important is that the rate, because these two guys are at rest with respect to each other, the rate at which time moves for each of them we can assume to be the same. Okay, so when 1 second elapses for Alice, 1 second also elapses for Bob. Okay, so when Alice's clock goes from 0 to 1, Bob's clock goes from 7 to 8. And when Alice's clock goes from 1 to 2, Bob's goes from 8 to 9, and so on. It's important to understand that we've made an assumption here. we've simply assumed that because they're at rest with respect to each other, when 1 second elapses for Alice, 1 second also elapses for Bob. That's an assumption. That assumption works when there's no matter around. If I stick mass, if I put a planet over there, that's no longer true. Okay, so in general relativity, the assumption that when 1 second elapses here, there, the same, it breaks down. Okay, so I want to try to identify as we go assumptions that we're making. Okay, that's one. But if there's no matter around, if we're just dealing with special relativity rather than general relativity, okay, then this assumption is in fact valid. Okay, so we got that. Let's consider another example. Suppose we have someone now in motion. Okay, so here's Cleopatra. And she is walking along Alice's x-axis. Okay, so that means that as time goes on, Cleo's position is moving to the right. Okay, so her world line is going to be tilted like this. Oh, I should say this is TB. This is time according to Bob's clock. Okay. So here is Cleo's world line is tilted to the right a little bit. Okay, so as time goes on, she covers some distance. Okay, and suppose that when Alice's clock reads 0, Cleo's clock also reads 0. We'll just start them off in sync like that. The key point here is we actually have no idea where to put Cleo's first second marker on here. Okay, does 1 second happen here? Does 1 second happen here? Where does 1 second occur for her? And we have no idea. Okay, And it actually turns out to look something like this. We will see this as we go along. 1 second occurs somewhere up there. And in this case, 2 seconds, these are going to then all be even, 3 seconds, and so on. So this is time according to Cleo. Okay, so because Alice and Cleo are in relative motion, their clocks move at different rates, relatively speaking. Okay, so when 1 second elapses for Alice, it's not true that 1 second elapses for Cleo. And we will discover how all that works. Okay, now suppose we have someone moving faster. Okay, so we have Dan. Okay, so Dan is moving faster. That means that in the same amount of time, he will cover more distance. So his world line tilts even more than Cleo's. So it tilts more to the right like this. Okay, and this effect, this is the time dilation effect, gets even worse. Okay, if this represented 1 second for Cleo, that for Dan, it's going to be even worse. It might be 1 second up there, 2 seconds there, and so on. Okay. So let's give one final example. Some of you who have done some special relativity may have gotten the impression that special relativity can only deal with people and objects moving at constant velocity. That's utterly untrue. Special relativity is easily capable of dealing with accelerated objects. In fact, trying to understand accelerated objects in the context of special relativity is one of the key steps that led Einstein to general relativity, okay, a theory of gravity. Okay, so let's consider an accelerated observer. So that means someone that, say, starts at rest over here, picks up speed, runs like this, turns around, and comes back. Okay, so their path in space is out and then back like that. How would we draw that path in space-time? Well, at t equals 0, they start here. As time goes, they first go out, and then they come back. Okay, so if you're moving at constant velocity, your world lines are straight lines. If you're accelerated, then your world lines are curved lines. Okay, so we'll have time according to, this is Ed. Okay, and so maybe Ed's time starts off at 0 here, whatever, it might look something like this. Okay, so this would be 1, 2, 3, 4, that sort of thing. Okay, so these are world lines. Okay, so what we are doing is we're being very careful to show explicitly any object's motion, not only in space, but also in time. That's a key step towards making sense of special relativity. Okay, on we go. Okay, so let's talk about, I want to talk about a thought experiment. We're going to develop a thought experiment here. And the thought experiment is going to take place just in air. It's going to involve sound moving in air. So I want to talk a little bit about sound in air. Okay, so you're very familiar with sound in air. We're going to take that familiar understanding, and we're going to translate it into the language of space-time diagrams. It's going to be a very important step here. Okay, so here's a space diagram of what's happening. Okay, so what we've got is Alice sitting here, standing at one location at rest, and this is her x-axis. This is x according to Alice, subscript A. Okay, and what is Alice doing? What she's going to do is clap her hands like this. Okay, ooh, exciting experiment. Okay, she's going to clap her hands. The thing about special relativity is all of the experiments are extremely simple, but they're conceptually very deep. Okay, so anyways, here's a simple experiment. Alice claps her hands. What happens when she does that? Well, she disturbs some air molecules here. Those air molecules bump into neighboring air molecules, causing them to jiggle. Those in turn bump into neighboring air molecules, causing them to jiggle. And like a domino effect, we have a wave radiating outwards. Okay, so we have a circular wave radiating outwards from the location of her hands, a spherical wave radiating outwards from from her clapped hands here. And each point on that wave front is moving radially outwards at the speed of sound, which we'll call c. Okay, so it's all moving outwards like that. And we will focus on two particular points on that expanding sphere. we'll focus on this point on the right here. This point is moving at a speed c, the speed of sound in air. Alice is at rest with respect to the air. This wave expands with a speed c in all directions. Okay, so that's a space picture of what's going on. Let's try to convert this into a space-time picture. Okay, so let's see. So we're going to put Alice's space axis. Here, but now we need to indicate also the motion of things in time. Okay, so I'm just going to get rid of this here. Okay, so what we would like to do is we would like to follow the motion of this point on the wavefront as it moves from this location to the right like this. Well, what we know is as this point on the wavefront is moving to the right, time is ticking away. Okay, so as we're moving to the right, time is ticking away. So the actual shape of the world line is just a line going to the right, tilted upwards like this. Okay, so now the thing is, what we know is the world lines of objects here, go back to this. If a world line is vertical, then that means that object is at rest. If a world line is tilted a little bit, that means they're moving. If it's tilted more, they're moving faster. So this is at rest. This is moving faster, faster, faster. Horizontal is moving infinitely fast. Okay, it's covering a huge amount of distance in a very small amount of time. Okay, so the speed of sound, that sound wave is moving at some speed, somewhere between zero and infinity. So it's one of these lines. Okay, and just by rescaling the axes, we're going to rescale the time axis, we can make it so that that line actually happens at 45 degrees. Okay, it's going to be convenient for all of the stuff that we do. Okay, so the way to do this is instead of plotting t versus x, what we're going to plot is speed of sound, c, times t versus x. Okay, so our axis is actually cta. Okay, so if we plot the motion through space-time of this point on the wavefront, okay, in a graph CT versus X, we're going to find that it's 45 degrees. And the reason is well, how can we say this? Okay, before I say that, let me say so someone who is this would be subsonic. And this would be supersonic. And that's the speed. Okay, so basically we can see that say, suppose we look at a point on this wavefront that has covered a distance d. Okay, so here we are. We've covered a distance d. If we look at how much time in terms of CTA has elapsed, we have time the time for this piece of the wavefront to cover a distance d, well, that's just distance divided by the velocity. So that's just d divided by the speed of sound. Okay, and so if TA is d over c, then CTA, c times that, is just d. Okay, so when the wavefront covers a distance d, then in CT, the amount of time in CT is also d. Okay, so you can see that this is clearly 45 degrees because that distance is the same as that distance. Okay, right. So one thing I wanted to point out here that's super important is that CTA, this guy here, T by itself has the dimensions of time, but C times TA has the dimensions of what? Length. Okay, so that's an extremely important point here. Let me just put that down here. I don't want to get all messed up. Let's put it here. So CTA is a length. same as XA. So instead of plotting time versus length, we're plotting length versus length. This is hugely important. Okay? So we are treating space and time on the same footing. Okay? And this is a crucial step towards unifying space and time into, or uniting them together, or welding them together into something called space-time. Okay? So the fact is, we're always going to be measuring time in the same units that we're measuring distance. Okay, so if we measure distance in meters, we're going to measure time in meters as well. Okay, actually, CT will be then in meters. Okay, so that's important. Right. Okay, so now we come to a key thought experiment. So this thought experiment is initially associated with the Doppler shift. Okay, but we will see that ultimately it's associated with the nature of time itself. Okay, key thought experiment. Okay, so how are we doing in terms of, can you all hear me? Everything is okay? Am I speaking reasonably clearly? Okay, all right. Is it making any sense? Okay. The key thought experiment is this. All right, so let's draw okay, down here, right at the bottom here, we have Alice. And she's at rest. This is her x-axis. Okay, and what we have is Bob. Bob is in Alice's space. He's drifting to the right in Alice's space. Okay, so he's drifting to the right with a constant speed v, less than the speed of sound. See, here's the sound, and I'm going to fall over. Okay, and I'm also going to need more vertical room here. You know, blackboards need to be taller, I think. All right, okay, so at least for relativity lectures. Maybe we can have some length contraction going on or something, I don't know. Okay. So first of all, we will draw Alice's world line in space-time. Okay, so we're taking the point of view that she's at rest, so her world line is vertical. Her space position doesn't change as time goes on. That's Alice's world line, okay, which we label CTA. Remember, it's always C times time versus X that we're plotting. Okay, so now let's see. First thing we want to say is we want to now put in Bob's world line. Okay, so let's suppose that so here is Alice at rest, and here is Bob. And Bob is drifting past her in this frame. Bob starts to the left of Alice, eventually moves to the right of Alice. At some point, they cross paths. Okay, so let's suppose they cross paths at this point, when Alice's clock reads 0. Okay, we say that Bob crosses paths with Alice. Okay, so that's Bob's world line. He's moving to the right as time goes on. Okay, and let's suppose that the instant that Bob passes Alice, he zeros his clock as well. So they both zero their clocks. It's like stopwatches. They click them to 0. Okay, so Bob clicks his stopwatch, and he resets his clock watch to 0 as well. And remember here that 45 degrees, this is the speed of sound, and Bob is moving less than the speed of sound, subsonic, so his world line is not quite tilted as far as 45 degrees. Okay, so that's the first thing. Okay, so now the next thing is to say, what's the deal with this experiment? So let me just describe the experiment in words here, and then we'll put it into the picture. So the idea, let's suppose Alice is over here, and she's at rest, and Bob is drifting past her like this. From the moment Bob passes her like this, Alice waits for a certain amount of time on her clock. She waits for, say, t seconds on her clock. And then Bob has drifted down to some distance over there. She claps her hands like this. She sends out a sound wave chasing after Bob. Because Bob is moving less than the speed of sound, that sound wave will eventually catch up with Bob. Bob will hear the sound wave. Okay? And then the next part of the experiment is the instant he hears the sound wave, he claps back like this and sends a sound wave back to her. Okay, and continues drifting on. That's it. That's our experiment. Okay? Again, one of those really simple experiments, but it's really going to bend your mind in an hour or so. Okay. So here we go. So let's draw that experiment in this space-time diagram. So the idea is Bob passes Alice, and then from that time on, Alice waits a certain time, say capital T. Okay, so she waits until her clock reads T. If her clock reads T, then CT is C times big T. Okay? And then at that instant here, she sends a sound wave chasing after Bob. Okay, this sound wave is drawn at what angle? 45, okay, because it's moving, moving relative to the still air at the speed of sound. Okay, so this guy here is 45. That's obvious. Okay, so what else can we put in here? Oh, right. Okay, so now let's say now we need to put in when Bob claps his hands. So as soon as he receives that sound signal, he hears it. He claps his hands and sends a sound signal back. At what angle do I draw that? Why? Bob's moving. I can see if someone's at rest, clap hands, that's 45 degrees. Bob is in motion. Bob is moving like this. He claps his hands like this and sends a sound signal back. With what speed does Alice measure that sound signal? Okay, maybe. The speed of sound is constant relative to what? To still air. That's right. So this is a super important point. Okay, so here is Bob. He's drifting like this. He's waiting to hear Alice's signal. He hears it. While he's moving, he claps his hands, bang, like this. A sound signal is sent that way. The thing is this. When Bob claps his hands like this, he disturbs air molecules here. Okay, and those air molecules bump into neighboring air molecules and so on, like we said, like a domino effect, that sound wave propagates outward. But that sound wave propagates, moves relative to still air. Okay, so if I'm standing here at rest, bang, 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 each time I clap my hands, I'm sending out a spherical wave traveling with a speed c in all directions. Okay, if I'm moving, when I clap my hands like this, bang, okay, I set up some disturbance over here, and then once that disturbance is set up, that disturbance propagates like dominoes relative to the still air, okay, and that disturbance doesn't care what my hands do afterwards, okay. So if I clap like this, here, and then that spherical wavefront moves out from the location of that clap, and then I clap again, and that spherical wavefront moves out from the location of that clap, okay. So the crucial point here, and let me just write this down, is that for an observer at rest with respect to the air, let's put it down here. Is it with respect to air? Okay, so for an observer at rest with respect to the air, that's just an abbreviation, with respect to the air. The speed of sound is independent of the motion of the source. Okay? This is of huge importance. Okay, now what I'm going to do here is to show you a little bit of a I'm going to show you just a little applet here. Okay, so this applet shows Doppler effect. Okay, so when you have a source that's moving, then certainly there is a Doppler shift, but the speed of sound is independent of the motion of the source. Let's do that. Zero. Okay, here we go. So what we've got here is a picture of an ambulance which is moving to the right, and the ambulance siren is going on, and you've probably all seen this sort of thing. So this ambulance is radiating sound, and so we have a sound source that's in motion. And so what we see is that the wave fronts, let me start this guy again. We see that the wave fronts in front of the ambulance are bunched together. So this observer, when the ambulance is approaching, will observe a higher frequency of sound, whereas the wave fronts on the other side are spread further apart. Okay? And so this observer here, when the ambulance is moving away from the observer, this observer will see a greater time between receiving each wave front, and so the sound will occur at a lower frequency. So it'll be higher pitched as the ambulance approaches and lower pitched as the ambulance recedes. The important point here is to observe that, sure, there's a Doppler shift. We all know about that. But notice that each time one of these sound waves is emitted from this moving source, that sound wave expands in a circle that's centered about a fixed point. So each point on any one of those wave fronts is moving at the speed c. That's the important thing to see here. Is that all clear? Right, okay, that's crucial to all of this. All right, very good. Okay. So. Right. What time have we got? Okay. Loads of time. Okay, am I going too fast? Should I speed up? Should I slow down?
Yeah.
Speed up? No, come on. I know that some of you might be having trouble with my accent or my whatever, you know. So, okay, so here we go. So we've got this picture here. What we've done so far in this picture is we've waited until Alice waits a certain amount of time, T. She sends a sound signal chasing after Bob. Okay, that sound signal is drawn at 45 degrees because it's moving relative to the still air. Okay, and so that's obvious. It hits Bob. Bob claps his hands, sends a sound signal back. And what we've just talked about is the fact that Alice will measure that sound wave coming back to her at a speed c, the ordinary speed of sound, because the sound is moving relative to the still air, and Alice is at rest with respect to that still air. Okay, so this guy is also at 45 degrees. That's important, okay, to all of the stuff we're going to do. Right. Next, I should put in here that, just to indicate, I'll use this symbol here just with a V next to it, just to indicate that Bob is moving with some speed V. Okay? Okay, so the next thing we want to think about is, let me put that 45 up here. Let's think about distances now. Okay, somehow we want to get V in here. Okay, so distance, time, all that stuff. Okay, so let's suppose that Bob hears the sound signal from Alice when he is a distance d away from Alice. Okay. So here's the thing. So the how should we do this? Okay, let's do this first. D. So what is d? Distance. So from Alice's point of view, Bob covers a certain distance in a certain amount of time. Okay. Bob covers distance is equal to velocity times time. Actually, now we need to actually figure out this time. Okay, so distance here is the velocity times the time. The time elapsed is big T plus whatever this time is. Now the one thing that's really, really helpful about having chosen to plot C times T versus X instead of T times X is that speed of sound is always at 45 degrees. So whenever you see a picture like this, where this distance is D, well, this distance is also D. This is D, and this is also D. This is a 45-degree triangle. Okay? So what it's saying basically is how much time does it take a sound wave to travel a distance D? Well, that time is just the distance divided by the velocity. When I multiply by the velocity, I just get the distance. Okay, so is that clear that these are also d? Is for anyone not clear? Okay. So that's a really convenient part of this whole 45 degree thing. So distance is velocity times time. So let's see. From Alice's point of view, what is Bob's velocity? Well, it's just v. Okay, what is the time? How long did it take Bob to reach this distance d? Well, it took a time equal to t plus d divided by c. So in other words, c, the time elapsed, c times delta t is equal to ct plus d. So the amount of time elapsed for Alice is just this guy divided by c, which is just t plus d over c. Okay, another way to think about it is the amount of time elapsed for Alice is simply the amount of time she waits before sending the sound signal plus the amount of time it takes sound to cover a distance d to reach Bob. That time is just distance over the speed of sound. So the total time is just big T, how long she waits, plus d over c, okay, the time it takes sound to move a distance d. Okay, so we multiply, the time here is big T plus d over c. That's that. Okay, so I will leave this as an exercise. This is an equation involving d. Okay, and so we can solve for d. That's just a tiny bit of algebra. I'll leave that for you to do. So you solve this and you find that d divided by ct, which will be convenient later on, is v over c divided by 1 minus v over c. Okay, so this is an important formula that I would like to just keep handy. So let's call this formula number 1. Okay? Now, where are the erasers? They're high up. Okay. Okay, so I'm just going to erase this. This is just an intermediate calculation here, not important to the diagram. Now comes the crucial part of this whole thing. The crucial part is how much time has elapsed for Bob? Okay, remember, when Bob crossed Alice's location, he set his stopwatch to 0. He's zeroed it at this point. As he's moving through space, of course, time is evolving for him. Okay, so time is ticking for him. The question is, what does his watch read the moment he receives the signal from Alice? Okay? Well, we actually don't know. It's not obvious from this picture how much time it is. Okay, so what we're going to say is, we don't know what it is, but it's going to be proportional to the amount of time that Alice waits. Okay, so let me draw another picture over here to give you a sense of that. Okay? So forgetting about the C and all that stuff, let's just suppose that Alice waits at time t, and then some amount of time will elapse for Bob. And we say that the amount of time that elapses for Bob is proportional to t. And there's some proportionality constant v. Why do we say proportional? Well, suppose that Alice waited for 2 seconds. Okay, well then some time will have elapsed for Bob. Suppose that Alice instead waits 4 seconds over here and to send out the light signal. Okay, just by the similarity of these triangles, if Alice waits double the amount of time, the amount of time elapsed for Bob will also double. Okay? So whatever time Alice waits here, the time for Bob to receive the signal is going to just be proportional to that amount of time. If we double the amount of time Alice waits, it will double the amount of time elapsed for Bob. Okay, so whatever this time is, it's going to be proportional to t here. And since we're plotting ct versus x instead of t versus x, we have an extra c in there. Okay, is that point clear? Yes? No? Okay, here we go. Okay, so the thing here is this k is some kind of a proportionality constant. This is an unknown proportionality constant. But it's going to depend upon, in some way upon the velocity. And we will see how it depends upon the velocity as we go along. Okay, so Okay, determining K. The title of our next section. Okay, so this is the heart of special relativity, okay, the logic of this thing. How do we figure out this number K? So one way we can do it is we can make an assumption. Okay, we can make an assumption called universal time. Okay, so by universal time, it's what we said before. Okay, when 1 second elapses for Alice, 1 second elapses for Bob, and for anyone else in the universe, okay, regardless of their state of motion relative to each other. Okay, so 1 second for Alice means 1 second for Bob. Okay, so if we go back to our picture over here, that means if this amount of time has elapsed for Alice, then the same amount of time will have elapsed for Bob. Okay, so we immediately know that KCT is equal to just CT plus D. Okay? So, oh, let me write it the other way. Time for Alice. The time for Alice is CT plus D. That must equal the time elapsed for Bob. When 1 second elapses for Alice, 1 second elapses for Bob, so the two must be equal. So that's KCT equals KCT. Okay, so dividing both sides by C, okay, just to simplify this equation here, we will get a second equation, which is T plus D divided by C is equal to KT. Okay, so that's a very important equation, which we'll call number two. Okay, so we've got two equations on the board here. One is an equation involving D. D is equal to some stuff here. Another equation is something involving K. So what we can do is take equation number one involving D, plug it in for D over here, and we'll be left with an equation for K, and you can solve for K. So I'll let you do that as an exercise. The answer is, if we combine those two equations together, eliminate D from them, we will get K is equal to 1 over 1 minus V over C. Okay, so this K, we had guessed that this K would depend upon the velocity in some way. And what we see is that, yes, in fact, it does depend upon the velocity. K is this particular function of the velocity. Notice that it's actually a function of just the ratio, the dimensionless ratio of V over C. So all that so K depends only upon, it doesn't depend upon the velocity. It depends upon how big the velocity is compared to the speed of sound. Okay, it's just that dimensionless ratio. Okay, so what is that ratio? What does that K mean physically? What do you think it means? What do you think it's related to? Physical effect.
Time dilation.
It's definitely related to time dilation. It's also related to Doppler shift. Okay, so okay, so K as Doppler shift. So let's see, how can we understand that? Well, let's consider this experiment here. Okay, so there's X Alice, and we have Alice over here. Alice is at rest, and what she's going to be doing is sending a sound signal to Bob, a single tone, okay, one frequency, like that. And so she's sending a wave out like this over to Bob. Okay, but Bob is drifting away from her. So this is Alice. This is Bob. Bob is drifting away with some speed v. Okay? So what do you expect if Alice sends something with some frequency? Will the frequency that Bob receives be lower or higher? Okay, so Bob is moving away from Alice. He's moving away from the source of sound.
Lower.
Okay, so it's going to be lower. And let's just see exactly how much lower. Okay, so let's call this frequency FA, frequency that Alice is sending it at, and the frequency that Bob hears is FB. Okay, so now let's put this into a space-time diagram here. So there's Alice's world line, and there's Bob's world line. Okay, I'm going to run out of room here. Let me just get rid of this guy. Okay, so the idea is this. We've got a wave which is moving over from Alice to Bob. Let's take two bits of that wave front. Let's take this wave crest and this wave crest. Let's look at those. Okay, so here's one wave crest. Starts over here at Alice's location, and that wave crest here, that's this guy over here, moves toward Bob. Okay, moves toward Bob at the speed of sound. Okay, so 45 degrees. Okay, and then Alice waits a certain amount of time, and then the next wave crest is emitted, and it goes over to Bob. Okay, so if this is, so the amount of time between wave crests for Alice is just 1 over the frequency. The period of a wave is just 1 over the frequency. Okay, so the amount of time between wave crests being emitted for Alice is just 1 over the frequency for Alice. Okay, so if an amount of time TA elapses for Alice between these two points, how much time will elapse for Bob here? What do you think?
1 over FB.
Yeah, 1 over FB, that's right. So 1 over the frequency, according to Bob, what will that be?
K over FA.
So here we've got a situation like this, where we've got Alice waits a certain amount of time T here, and then the amount of time KT elapses for Bob. So whenever an amount of time T elapses for Alice, the corresponding amount of time that elapses for Bob is K times T. So the time elapsed for Bob between receiving those two wave crests is just going to be K times TA. So let me just expand on that a little bit. Okay, so here we've got Alice, here we've got Bob. The picture that we have over there, if we drop the C's, the picture that we've got over there is Alice waits a time T, sends a light signal over to Bob, the amount of time elapsed for Bob is K times T. Okay? So if I were to, say, divide this guy in half here, or something like that, and just take, or let's say just do another one up here. Okay, suppose this is 2T. If this is 2T, then this will be 2 times KT, will be the total time over here. Okay? So if you look at that picture, you can see that this time is T. And when this time is T, this time is KT. Okay, so whenever you have a situation of a vertical line like this, and some line at some angle like that, and you're sending sound signals between them like that, then whatever time elapses here, to get the time here, you just multiply by k. Okay, so that's what we're doing here. So the amount of time between wave crests for Alice is TA. The amount of time between wave crests that Bob receives will be k times TA. Okay, so we know that. That tells us that the frequency, according to Bob, is 1 over the period, according to Bob. That's 1 over k ta. So that's 1 over k times 1 over ta, or 1 over ta, 1 over the period is the frequency. Okay, so we got the frequency according to Bob is 1 over k times the frequency according to Alice. So k is directly related to the Doppler shift. Okay, so we had an expression for k up here on the board, which we erased just to make some room. 1 over k is just 1 minus v over c. So the end result then is that the frequency that Bob sees is related to the frequency that Alice sees by this factor, and that's a Doppler shift. Okay, and so you can see that this makes sense, this Doppler shift formula. How many of you have talked about Doppler shift, and how many know about Doppler shift? I've done some of that. So you recognize this, right? Okay, so this is just a standard Doppler shift. Okay, so what it's saying is that when the velocity, when Bob's velocity is 0, let me put it up here. So what it's saying is when that Bob's velocity is 0, so Bob is just at rest with respect to Alice. Alice is sending a sound signal over. These are the successive wave fronts making their way over to Bob. What we find is that when V is 0 in there, we have frequency according to Bob is the same as the frequency according to Alice, and there's no Doppler shift. If the velocity is positive, so here's Alice, here's Bob. Bob is drifting to the right. So Bob is moving away from the source of sound. He's drifting away from the source of sound. That's a vertical line. Then what we find is that the frequency according to Bob is 1 minus v over c. Suppose it's half the speed of sound that he's drifting away with. 1 minus a half is a half. So the frequency according to Bob is half the frequency according to Alice. So the frequency according to Bob is then, in general, less than the frequency according to Alice. Okay, so Bob hears the siren or hears the tone at a lower frequency, lower tone. Okay, what if we stick in a negative velocity? What does negative velocity in this case mean? Other direction, right? So here's Alice. If the velocity is positive, Bob is tilted this way, his world line. If the velocity is negative, Bob's world line is tilted this way. Okay, so now we're looking at a situation like this, okay, where Alice sends light signal and sound signals over like that. Okay, so now as Bob is moving toward the source, those sound wave crests are going to be washing over him more quickly. Okay, he's going to hear a higher frequency. Okay, so if we stick a negative velocity in there, say negative 1/2 speed of sound, we get negative of negative 1/2 is positive 1/2. So we get that the frequency is bigger. Frequency Bob is bigger than frequency Alice. Okay, so that's Doppler shift. What happens if the velocity is greater than c? Suppose we go to here. What if v is greater? What if v is equal to c? What do you get? It tells you that frequency according to Bob is 0. Okay, so Alice is sending out a tone. Bob is drifting at the speed of sound. Okay, so what Bob actually sees is not wave crests overlapping him like this, overtaking him. Because he's moving at the same speed as that wave train that's moving through the sound, through the air, he's at rest with respect to that wave train. Okay, and so he sees zero frequency. Okay, so all that makes sense. So I hope that makes I hope that that's clear. Okay, so that's sound in air. Now what we want to do is move to the real subject of interest, which is light. Okay, and this is going to be special relativity then. Okay, so let's see here. Okay, let's do a little bit more. We got a bit of a late start today. So I'll go a little bit longer, or a little bit past our normal time here. So, how are we doing so far? Are we okay? Is it reasonably clear? If you're not following everything, don't worry about it. Don't get panicky. Okay, because what you've got is your buddies. You've got made tons of friends now, right? So you've got buddies, and you can chat with them, and you can sort things out in the afternoon. Okay, and you've got, you can borrow their notes, et cetera, et cetera. So don't worry. Just try to pay attention. Okay, sound. We're going to replace sound with light. Okay, so the fact is this replacement is very easy to do and very simple. Okay, so the crucial point is this. When you think of light, what is light? Electromagnetic wave. Okay, simpler. A wave. It's just a wave. Energy. Okay, when you think of waves, you think of sound waves, water waves, that kind of stuff, right? So typically you think of, like, a sound wave is a disturbance, is a vibration of some physical medium, the air, elastic medium. Okay, this is also a wave. If I hit the table like this, I send a wave down the surface of the table. Okay, there's a compression wave which moves in that material. Okay, water waves, same deal. I hit the surface of the water, waves go out, so waves, we tend to think of waves as vibrations of some kind of medium, as some kind of substance, some kind of stuff that's vibrating. Okay? When we say a wave, there's something waving. Okay? In the case of the water waves, it's water molecules that are waving up and down like this. In the case of sound waves, it's air molecules that are waving around like this. Okay, so let's imagine just for the moment that light is that kind of a thing. Light is some kind of a wave in some kind of a material. Okay, this is the idea of the light that people had for a long time, essentially beginning in the 1800s. So if so it's called a wave in ether. Okay, so if light okay, does anyone not know the word ether? Does anyone know the word ether? Okay, so the idea was in the 1800s that light is a wave. All other waves that we are aware of are disturbances of some medium. So light is if light is a wave, there must be some medium that's disturbing, that it's a vibration of. Okay, and so they invented this concept of the ether. Okay, and it's an intuitive, nice sort of mechanical picture of how of what light might be. Okay, so if light is a wave in ether, that means light is exactly analogous to sound in air. Light as a vibration of ether, sound as a vibration of air. Okay, so this is analogous to sound in air. Sound waves in air. Okay, then we have exactly the same diagram. Exactly the same situation. Okay, in that situation, that diagram is the diagram that we drew. Well, I guess it's disappeared now. Let's draw it again. Okay. So the diagram looks like this. So this is Alice's world line. She's at rest. Here's Bob. Bob's world line. Here's his clock ticking away. Okay, and what we do is we wait. Instead of sound, now we're going to use light. Alice is going to have a flashlight. Okay, so when Bob crosses Alice's path, from Alice waits a certain amount of time, T. So in a CT picture, it's CT. Okay, and then she sends a light signal chasing after Bob. Okay, and so she clicks on her flashlight, light signal goes out like this, and we draw this light signal at 45 degrees. Okay, because the light, we're just going to suppose that Alice is at rest with respect to the ether. Okay, so then that light moves with speed c. Okay, and then, by the way, this is the speed of light here, and so Bob is, instead of subsonic, Bob is subluminal. So subluminal here, superluminal velocity there. Okay, so, and C here is the speed of light. So if light is a wave in ether, then it's exactly the same as sound in air. We draw the same picture. Okay, Alice sends out that light signal. The instant Bob receives that light signal, he sees it, he clicks on his own flashlight and sends a light signal chasing back to Alice. Because light, we're assuming light is a wave in ether, okay, then that light will move relative to the ether. Alice is at rest with respect to the ether. She sees that light from Bob coming at her at a speed c. Okay, so this is also 45 degrees. Okay? And if the distance Bob is away from Alice when he receives that, when he sees that light signal, if that distance is d, well, we stick that d over there in that diagram. Because these are 45s, we know immediately that these are also d's. Okay? That's that. Okay, so we have exactly the same diagram. That's the important point here. Okay, I think I have everything. Oh, we also need this. So the important question then is, how much time elapses for Bob here? Well, same idea. We don't quite know. We know it's going to be proportional to t. We don't know what that proportionality constant is, so we just call it k. Okay, so it'll be k t, but because we're plotting c versus x instead of just ct versus x, we have an extra c in there. So if it's ct here, it's kct there, and we don't know what that k is. We're trying to figure out what this k is. Okay, last time we figured out that k by making the assumption of universal time. Okay, this time we're going to drop that assumption, and we're going to make a better assumption, and we're going to determine k. Okay, the better assumption is the principle of relativity. Okay, so let's go here. So Einstein based his theory of special relativity on two principles, which we'll call principle one and principle two. Principle one is the relativity principle, and principle two has to do with the speed of light. Okay, at the very beginning of this lecture, I told you just saying that c is a universal constant is not the statement that Einstein made. Okay, the actual principle is more like this. In fact, I'll read the principle in his paper. The principle is, any ray of light moves in the stationary system of coordinates with the determined velocity c, whether the ray be emitted by a stationary or a moving body. Okay. So I'm going to paraphrase that to read this. An observer at rest, we'll talk about that in a second. Independent of the motion of the source of the light. Okay, that's precisely what Einstein is saying here. Now, it's very important here to look at this concept of at rest. Okay, this is put in quotation marks, and in fact, it's also put in quotation marks in Einstein's paper. Einstein uses the word stationary. We're using the word at rest. Okay, so just to be consistent with our other language. So basically, all Einstein is saying here, this is very important, all Einstein is saying is there exists at least one frame of reference in which it is true that the speed of light is independent of the motion of the source. Okay? That's obviously true. Okay, so there exists at least one frame. At least one frame of reference, at least one space in which this is true. Okay? So for example, so why is this obviously true? Well, this would have been obvious to anyone in 1905 when Einstein put this paper out. So one of the reasons is most people at that time, most physicists at that time, had this mechanical model of light in mind, this wave in ether. Okay, if it's waving, there's got to be some substance that's waving, and that's the ether. So they thought of light as a mechanical vibration, or mechanical wave in ether. the mechanical wave and ether model predicts precisely this. Okay, there exists at least one frame in which this is true, well, the frame of the ether. Okay, if you're at rest with respect to the ether, it's just like being at rest with respect to the air. Okay, the speed of sound or the speed of light is independent of the motion of the source. That's obvious, would have been obvious to anyone at that time. Second is Maxwell's equations predict this. Okay, so in the 1860s or whatever it was, Maxwell had developed Maxwell's equation, which is a description of electromagnetic phenomena. And it was realized that light is an electromagnetic phenomena. Okay, and so what Maxwell's equations tell you is this. They tell you that there's at least one frame of reference in which the following is true. If I take, I'm going to back up a little bit, all light, the source of all light at a classical level, not quantum, the source of all light is accelerated electric charge. So if I take a comb my hair, get some static electricity on it, and shake it back and forth like this, I'm generating light of a very low frequency, low electromagnetic waves. But all light is of that general character. Okay? If I take a charge and accelerate, move it around, accelerate it like this, then what I'm doing is I'm radiating electromagnetic waves, okay, in all directions. And what Maxwell's equations, which describe electromagnetic phenomena, say is that all of those waves move with a speed c. Okay, independent of the motion of the source. Okay, no matter how this source moves, it's independent. Okay, so all physicists would have known that. Okay, and there are also very simple astronomical observations that you can make. Okay, I won't get into that. Basically, you just look at binary star systems in a distant, very, very far away, and it's obvious that this is true. Okay, so. The point is, and we'll quit after this point, this principle of the speed of light, this statement of the principle is the correct statement and is a perfectly natural principle. It's perfectly believable. Okay, what is not believable is a related principle. We'll call it P2 prime. Okay, so this is, we'll say, exactly the same words here, okay, except we will replace the word observer with the word source. Okay, so it's the exact same sentence. They won't write it out again. Say for a source at rest, the speed of light is c independent of the motion of the observer. Okay, if we just switch those two words, okay, we have a very different principle here. This principle is totally bizarre. So what this principle is saying is, if the source is at rest, then the speed of light is independent of the motion of the observer. That's the example I gave you at the beginning. If I got a flashlight there at rest, source at rest, and I'm moving toward the flashlight or away from the flashlight, that principle says that whether I'm going toward or away or being at rest or whatever, the speed of light that I see will be independent of my motion. That's completely ridiculous. There's no way. There's no way that makes any sense. Okay, so I can't believe that. I can't. It's totally bizarre. Okay, so this is totally bizarre. Okay, so P2 is obvious. P2 prime is totally bizarre. So Einstein did not say this. He said this. Okay. However, this is actually true. Okay, and we'll see that. If you take the relativity principle and P2, combine them together, it implies this logically. Okay, and so the way around this, the way to understand this, so what Einstein did is he gave us a new vision, a new understanding of what space and time actually are, which allowed us to understand this fact in a way that's totally obvious to us. We look at it and say, it is totally obvious. When if I run toward a flashlight or away from a flashlight, I will measure the same speed c. It has something to do with the nature of space and time. So Einstein provided us a way in which that becomes totally obvious. And that's the real heart of special relativity. And we should actually stop with that. And let's see. So we'll talk about the relativity principle tomorrow. And we will determine K properly, the relativistic Doppler shift. And from that will emerge a true understanding of what time is. So what I would like to do is just point out that we've got some some problems here. So this is the brain booster exercises, which I want to just give to you. I'll just point them out here. So let's see here. Okay. It's coming to life. I see a light. I see 14, 13, 12. Okay. So the idea is I'll just chat a little bit about these exercises. Then you're going to take a brief break, just 1 minute. Okay. A 10 minute break. Just go into the bistro there, 15 minutes, grab something to eat, you know, a little muffin or something, and then come back and we're going to have some exciting stuff to talk about to do with quantum. Okay, so here's one of the exercises here. So let me just zoom in a little bit here. Ooh, okay. Okay, so in fact, why don't I hand these guys out? That would actually probably be the best thing. Okay, so here we go. Why don't you just grab one and pass it down? And grab one and pass it down, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's not just one there.